It's Sunday morning. Time for the great outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. Thanks for joining me this morning. I hope you're going to like the show and the subjects we cover. But first, I'm going to start with a little bit of a story about a day of fishing in the fall. And whether you like to fish or not, the fall on a trout stream is a magical time. Whether you're just sitting on the bank with a good book, whether you're walking along its edges, or whether you're actually getting into the water, as I did recently on one of the kinds of days that when you think of fall, you hope you have lots of, but you really have too few. Brilliant sunshine, all the leaves, the alders, the poplar, the birch, everything just snapping in perfect color. And a little trout stream meandering through the woods with the sunlight sort of dimpling on the water and the leaves just rustling enough that when the wind blows a little more than 5 miles an hour, a few fall down, but you constantly have just this little bit of rustling in the trees. And before you are rising rainbow and brook trout. That's the kind of day that once a year, if I can have it, I live for. And I'm sure many of you live for that kind of a day, whether it's in the fall going up to catch a muskie or to try to catch a walleye or bass. In my case, today it was a day about catching a trout. And it quickly became evident that trout fishing was going to be absolutely spectacular. The cold water running by my thighs, here we are in early October, we've already had a lot of cold weather, which if you listen to the weather forecasters, they say it's abnormal, but I've been outside long enough over my life to remember the time that I went up on the 10th of October with my 9-year-old son up to Rock Lake, North Dakota, for the first week of the duck season. We arrived, it was 60 degrees, we left, it was 17, and in a blizzard. These things happen regularly, so just the fact that we've had one again in the last few days is not abnormal. But anyway, back to the trout stream. I didn't have that kind of a day. I had just the picture-perfect day, a packed lunch in my back, a great friend with me, and we just meandered up this small spring creek, casting to pools, casting to rising trout, all the fish we caught. Took either a dry fly right on the surface or struck it to dry and then took the nymph right below it. It was magical, and we caught a ton of fish, and some of them were 16 inches, and they were great fighters. But that's not the story. The story is going off into the North Woods for a day when everything hits, when the sun, the water, the sky, the leaves, and yes, the fish are all in their full splendor. And so when I think about days outdoors, I think about times like that. Sure, I remember the snowstorm where I had to huddle against an ice heater with my dog and a duck blind. Or I remember the time I was stranded on a river because I couldn't get across because of the wind. Or I remember the time I was at Yellowstone Lake, the far end of the lake, and the wind came up. And stupidly, I tried to cross a lake, which has claimed many lives. And I don't even know why I did it, but I did. But I made it across. But today, this day in the North Woods, is the magic that makes fall. And Ernest Hemingway used to write about there's no time like fall. There is no time like fall. And so first part of the show, I just thought I would share with you, we still have a lot of fall left. There's still a lot of colors out there, particularly as the season begins to move south. And we don't think of Illinois as a place necessarily where everyone thinks, go to the North Woods of Wisconsin to see the spectacular colors and the maple and the alder and the birch and the oak. That's all true. We have great colors in Illinois, particularly as you go south and you get into Suwannee National Forest in southern Illinois. We can have some absolutely spectacular colors out along the Mississippi and Galena and all along the Mississippi. And there may be no better colors anywhere in Illinois than on the Illinois River and the silver maples when they turn. And they're turning now. The opening weekend of the duck season in Illinois coming next weekend, and I can guarantee you one of the great splendors of being there, if the sun shines, one of the great splendors of being there will be that the silver maples are indeed gold and silver and the colors. So just take advantage of fall if you have a chance. If you haven't been out of the city, just take a drive. Go into one of our forest preserves. Look at the trees. And if you really have a chance, pick a perfect fall day and go get in the water and just be with nature. It's really what makes, at least in my case, and I know so many of you, it motivates you. It's our getaway from the world. There's no radio. There's no telephone. It's just you, maybe a few fish, or just you and maybe on a horse, or just hiking down a trail. But the golden leaves of autumn and the blue sky, and now we have a full moon, make it just indeed great to get outdoors and great to be alive. I'll be back in just a moment. And when I come back, I'm going to talk a little bit about what's going on with one of my favorite subjects, the Pebble Mine. I'm also going to talk about what's happening in Washington regarding conservation funding and this idea that we, in fact, are running out of money. I'll be back in just a moment. This is Charlie Potter, the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN. And first, a message from our long-time sponsors, the Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
Every game, it's all on the line. Personal, one-on-one, head-to-head. You have to look for every advantage. Strength, speed, and power to win.
Dan Hampton knows when you're looking for a tough competitor, Chevy Silverado has every advantage. Silverado's Ecotec 3 V8 gets better mileage than Ford's F-150 EcoBoost V6. You heard it here. Plus, Silverado's trailering package delivers 12,500 pounds of towing capacity that guarantees hauling muscle. More power, better performance. That's the kind of advantage that wins games. And there's never been a better time to see your local Chevy dealer about the Big Fix lease. It's an amazing lease deal that can lower your monthly payments and give you more Chevy than you ever imagined for less money. Your Chevy dealer knows what it takes to be a winner.
Take it from number 99. Chevy Silverado is an all-star. See your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for details. Kick off the season right. Go for it.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show, and from my little sojourn in the Northwoods trout stream, I'm going to move now to a linear subject, breaking of conservation funding. And I say breaking of conservation funding because the statistics that have come out in recent weeks indicate that for those of us who love the outdoors and love conservation, we are going the wrong way. The statistic that caught my attention, in 1982, conservation funding was 4% of the federal budget in 1982. Today, it is less than 1% of the federal budget. Now, you could say the federal budget's grown enormously, and it has, but the value of money has also lessened. $35 billion is the number that's come out. I don't actually think that's right. There are studies that I have seen that indicate the actual funding for conservation is more in the area of $22 to $24 billion, with the federal government providing the overwhelming majority of this, the states providing about $2 to $3 billion, and the private sector providing about $1 billion in conservation funding. So $35 billion is not a number that I would use. But the number that I would use is that less than 1% of today's federal budget goes to conservation, versus 4% in 1982. So this has led to, frankly, a significant change in the way we are able to maintain, manage, acquire, and work with the private sector on conservation interests. And it's a very bad trend line for simply no other reason than we know we've got a multi-billion dollar maintenance backlogs in our national parks alone. If you have been to our national parks recently, Yellowstone, Yosemite, they're gorgeous. But the facilities are not. They do not equal the majesty of the place that they are there to protect. And when we created the Yellowstone Lodge, we created Yosemite and Grand Teton and, my goodness, Grand Canyon, you can go all across the country, we did so with an eye towards providing the American public not only with an incredible experience in our national parks, but also with an experience of hospitality and where you could enjoy staying in our national parks. The infrastructure from roads to facilities to lodges to fences, everything is in decline. And it's because
we do not have the money to maintain it. If the federal government today were at the same percentage of a federal budget, 4% for conservation, we were, by the numbers that I trust and have seen, we would be somewhere in the neighborhood of $80 billion a year, as opposed to $22 to $24 billion a year. That's $60 billion a year is real money, and I happen to believe that some of the best money spent in the federal budget is spent on conservation, and I'm sure many of you do. That doesn't mean it's perfect. It doesn't mean there's waste. There's always waste when you come to a state or federal government. It's just part of the animal, and that's not picking on them. It's just the way it is. There is waste. But $60 billion would, on an annualized basis, think what that would have meant and would mean to our national forests, our national parks, our beaches, all of outdoor recreation. We don't have it. Instead, we're going the other way. So what is happening is a group of conservation leaders, I don't consider myself a conservation leader, but a group of conservation individuals have been getting together to try to address what are we going to do about this. And they have come up with, if you consider it on a scale of what I'm talking about, pennies in a room, but it's meaningful. They have come up with the notion that we need to have about $1.3 billion more annually of funding for conservation to begin to address the backlog of maintenance. But more than maintenance, there's a huge element of management. Our national parks, our national forests, our BLM lands are all woefully undermanaged. They're not only overused, they're undermanaged. So this consortium of conservation interests and now legislators are looking at how could we possibly get $1.3 billion a year more for conservation than we have now. And that would be about a 5% increase over what we're receiving now. So it is on the, if you will, it's on people's minds that we have a serious problem. And for those of you who use our state parks, our national parks, national forests, you're keenly aware that things are not being managed to their maximum ability, nor are they being maintained. Another component of this, of course, is that most of the lands in America are privately owned. And a lot of landowners want to do good things for wildlife. They don't have the expertise. Years ago, the Illinois Department of Conservation, as it was known then, had super private lands individuals who would come to your property, talk to you about what you could do. And I remember in my case seeing a letter from the Department of Conservation that was written to my father back in the 1950s on our farm in northern Illinois, which was a description of how you could manage 40 acres, just 40 acres, for pheasants. And it was a detailed, long letter, and it referred to all kinds of journals. And this is in the 1950s. An individual came and spent the equivalent of several days with my father designing a plan for pheasants on 40 acres. Think about that today. It would never happen. You could have 4,000 acres, and good luck. There are a couple people in the state of Illinois, and Terry Musser is at the very top of this, but Terry has been at the Department now of Natural Resources a long time, who will come and do that with you. But this used to be commonplace. You used to be able to call the Department of Natural Resources and say, I need some help managing my private lands, and you would have a private lands manager there. That's not going to happen again. We don't have the money. And on the federal level, we did a great deal more of that than we do now through the Natural Resource Conservation Service. It's still there, but it's a shell of what it was. So private landowners who want to manage wildlife have to now employ private companies, nothing wrong with that, private companies to come and tell them how to manage wildlife and do the management for them. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But what it shows is that our tax dollars, which have only increased, are not providing the services for conservation that they once did. The states, almost all of them, have cut back on their ability to work with private landowners and to manage their land. So the alternative is you hire a private company. That's great, except now you're paying twice. You paid your taxes to the Department of Natural Resources through the state of Illinois, and you used to have a private lands manager. Now you pay your taxes to the state of Illinois, you don't get any of those services. Instead, you have to go out and hire a company to do the work that you've already paid for through your taxes. So I think what we're facing in Illinois and what we're facing really across the country is a change, and I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying that wildlife management is headed in the direction of being privatized, which is an absolute anathema to the people at states and the federal government. But it's occurring because they no longer are doing the job that they once did. So if you think about that number I mentioned a few minutes ago, 4% of the federal budget in 1982 went to conservation interests. Less than 1% does today. On an equal basis, today we're getting about $22 to $24 billion in conservation spending, much of that through the Department of Agriculture. In 1982, had we had the same numbers, that would be, today, if we still had 4% of the federal budget, that number would be over $80 billion. We are getting shortchanged, folks. The need to pay all kinds of social costs and legacy costs have eaten in by 75% of the funding that once went to conservation to protect our natural resources. It's a bad situation. It's going to get worse. And what's going to be the result is the increased privatization of management and the increased inability to properly manage our state and federal lands. And in Illinois, if you're heading out to public lands this fall to hunt, you're going to notice, if you've been going for many years as I have, they just, despite the best efforts of the people who are actually on that land doing the best job they can, they don't have the resources, they don't have the equipment that they once did, and our public lands in Illinois are poorly maintained at best. So it's not a commentary on Illinois. It's happening across the country, even in big hunting states out west. They are also finding that their revenues are being compromised because of funds being siphoned off for legacy costs. Lastly, on that subject, watch the decline in Pittman-Robertson sales revenues. That's from the sale of firearms. It continues to go on. Now that the Obama administration, that's not a political statement, but now that the Obama administration has been out 3 years, the gun sales in America have declined dramatically. And the result is less revenue for fishing wildlife. So that's about it on the Great Outdoor Show this morning. I hope you've enjoyed it. In the last 30 seconds or so, you'll be glad you were not in Rock Lake or Bismarck, North Dakota, or Winnipeg, anywhere along that northern line this past couple days as a true winter blizzard blew in early October. And what that's going to mean for those of you heading next weekend to northern Illinois for the opening of the duck season and following week in the central zone, you're going to see ducks that have left the prairies prematurely, because the one thing birds cannot stand is they cannot stand snow. They lose their ability to feed, even though it was a fast-moving storm, and we're going to be back into the 40s across that entire southern Canadian provincial area, the northern prairies where so many waterfowl stage. You're going to find that maybe a few have moved your way, because snow on the ground sends birds south fast, and that's true of all birds. Thank you for listening. Hope you've enjoyed it. The show, this is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.